This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us. Today, we're going to be talking once again about the COVID pandemic. Now, today, we're talking about a little bit more of the focus on the future as the vaccine has become available. We are joined again by Dr. Stanley Martin of Geisinger's Infectious Diseases Department. He'll be talking to us about the current state of the pandemic and what we can expect in the near future thanks to the vaccinations that are now being given out. Dr. Martin, thanks for being with us again. Over the last couple of months, the numbers of cases have soared and the number of hospitalizations have also been going up. But is that reaching a peak now?
That's likely not the case. The number of cases in the state and in the country continue to rise. We saw a little bit of a bump, of course, after Thanksgiving holiday when people decided to ignore some of those measures, which we know can prevent the spread of infection, like wearing the mask, social distancing. And I expect we will unfortunately see another bump after the Christmas holiday and New Year.
Now, as we mentioned, vaccines are being given now. So let's get an update on those and what the various options are.
Both of these vaccines have been issued an FDA emergency use authorization. And thanks to some pre-authorization contracts in place with the federal government, a lot of vaccine had already been manufactured and was ready for distribution, and it has gone out to the states, and from there to some of the different health systems throughout the state. Here at Geisinger, we got almost about 3,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine to start with. And that was at the directive of the state to start administering to our own healthcare personnel, who are on the front lines, of course, of battling COVID every day.
And people are getting in line not once but twice for these. Why is there a need for two different rounds of vaccinations?
That's not uncommon with a lot of vaccines, right? Although we think of something like a flu shot as being just one shot every year, think about the childhood vaccines that you got, well, at least some of us have gotten, right? Like measles, mumps, rubella, or polio. Those all require a series of shots in order to prime the immune system at a sufficient enough level to maintain some immunity. And these vaccines are likely no different, and that is why the two-shot starter. You know, you can think of it as the first shot is introducing your immune system to the virus, the proteins of the virus. I should point out that neither of these vaccines actually contain the virus, right? There's always a lot of worry about that with vaccines, that, oh, you're just giving me the virus, but that is certainly not the case with either of these. But with that first shot, you essentially kind of prime the immune system a little bit, and then with the second shot, you make sure that the response can be sufficiently robust.
Can you tell us a bit about how the vaccines are made up?
So they're not egg-based, that is true. If you have an allergy to eggs, you are perfectly safe to get either of these vaccines. They do not contain DNA of the virus. They contain a very similar type of genetic structure from the virus, something we call RNA. And it's just one little piece of the RNA, the piece that codes for the protein on the surface of the virus, on that little spike that sticks out from the virus, which is what helps it get into the cells in your respiratory tract in the first place. And so by helping do that, you can create antibodies which will block that protein, preventing it from getting into the cell in the first place.
Let's talk a bit about side effects now. And any that may have been seen so far.
Some of the effects that we get after the vaccine, I don't even like to call side effects. We're going to call them reactogenicity effects because it's essentially, again, an expected response from your immune system kind of revving up as a result of the vaccine. And this can happen with any number of vaccines, not just the COVID vaccine. And we're talking about symptoms like headache, low-grade fever, muscle or body aches, feeling somewhat tired, right? Like you're feeling a little bit draggy. And these are symptoms that come along with the effects of the immune system responding to the vaccine. This is, it's almost like your body is telling you, hey, this is working. These symptoms, although they're not much fun, they are fairly mild for the most part, and they resolve within about 24 to 48 hours at the most. And so it's a small price to pay for having to prevent yourself from getting COVID in the first place.
Anything local that's been a concern?
Yeah, so a lot of people will experience some of those symptoms. Maybe even as much as a third of people might experience some of those symptoms. And the symptoms might even be a little bit stronger with that second shot. Now, as far as more serious reactions go to the vaccine, those are super rare. And at least in the studies, we did not see any significant side effects like that. We have heard, and you may have heard as well, that some people have had an allergic reaction to the vaccine. That is very uncommon, but it is true. Some people have. We're talking about maybe in the United States, I think as of this weekend, the CDC had identified 6 cases out of 270,000 doses. So very rare event that can, of course, be treated when a person comes in to get their vaccine. There are medications which help treat that when it does happen. But it's extremely rare, and further study is being done on that front.
So let's say I've received the first shot and the second shot. Now I've been vaccinated. What's next?
Not everybody has been vaccinated as of yet, right? Only a few people have. And as time goes on, more and more people will be vaccinated. But we still have a couple of challenges. We still have the challenge of not everybody being vaccinated, a lot of people still being susceptible to the virus. We have questions about the durability of the vaccine immunity, right? So even if you get vaccinated, we don't know just yet how long the immunity is going to last. We hope it's going to last a good long time, and the data definitely looks encouraging, but we don't know just yet. And so to that end, it is extremely important that even after vaccine, we are still mindful, at least for now, of all those measures that we know do work very well to prevent the spread of the virus, right? Wearing a mask in public, wearing a mask around others, social distancing, hand hygiene, right? Keeping those hands clean. All those things are still going to be important going forward, at least for the immediate foreseeable future.
So is this the beginning of the end of that?
I would certainly say so, right? So vaccination is clearly the key to solving this problem for us in the long run. There's a lot of vaccines being developed. Pfizer and Moderna are just two, and they look extraordinarily promising as vaccines go. But there's other vaccines that are being developed as well. And I think there's a lot that we're going to have to learn about the immunity to this virus over time. But if we're going to control this virus, if we're going to control our lives again and get back to any kind of normalcy, we're going to have enough immunity in our populations to do that. And the vaccine is really the only way that we're going to get there. When that's going to happen and how it's going to happen and in what steps it's going to happen, still not clear, right? But as you say, this is the light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's important to think of it that way and to embrace it.
But can I still carry the virus even after I've been vaccinated?
So that's theoretically true. We don't know a lot about this just yet. It's true that vaccines not only can help prevent infection, but they can also prevent disease. And that's, of course, a difficult thing to maybe recognize, that there is a difference between infection and disease. You can be infected with a microbe but not actually have any symptoms, right? And we know that happens with COVID all the time. And vaccines can oftentimes, even if they don't necessarily prevent the infection, go a long way towards preventing disease. And although it seems like these vaccines do an excellent job of preventing actual infection, they certainly seem to do a great job for preventing disease.
So I guess we could say that still wearing a mask would be advisable even after I've received the vaccine?
There's still a lot that we're learning on this front, I have to say. And so I don't think the final word has been written just yet. But these are the things that we worry about. as we kind of, you know, look to the future here.
What else are we still learning about the vaccine and its aftermath?
I think we're still learning about how this vaccine works in different populations, depending on your age, you know, what other medical problems you may have, the benefit in pregnant women are all things, I think, that we're still trying to learn about the vaccine. And so some of the nuances and subtleties, again, I think we're still walking that path.
Yet so many people still say they're not going to be getting this. Then what?
Well, you know, if you look at surveys of Americans about this particular vaccine, you find that roughly 50 to 60% of them generally will off the bat say, yes, please, you know, sign me up. And then you have maybe about 10-15% who say, nope, no way, not going to do it, right? And then you have the remainder which say, well, you know, maybe, why don't I learn a little bit more and see how it goes, right? And I think what you'll see over time is the group that are in that maybe category will fall into the yes category, because they will see that it is safe. They will see that there really is advantage in getting this done. There are some people who, at the end of the day, you know, you can try to convince them the earth isn't flat, and they're just not going to believe you, right? They're not really interested in learning about things, and I'm not sure we can necessarily convince that group. I will always try, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
We've also been hearing about this mutation of the virus. What do we need to know about that?
So this has been, you know, a concern about COVID since the beginning, and in fact, we've seen some evidence of various mutations as it has spread throughout the world. And this is, again, not uncommon with a lot of viruses, that mutations occur all the time. The vast, vast majority of the mutations don't really add up to a hill of beans. But occasionally you can see a change in a virus that has some kind of physiological effect. And it's thought that based on the number of mutations and the types of mutations seen in this particular strain that's been identified in the United Kingdom, that it makes it more contagious, more easily spread. That's a difficult thing to study, of course, but it's certainly theoretically possible that that is the case. Now, we have no evidence to date to suggest that that kind of COVID strain results in a more significant or severe disease, and there's certainly no reason to necessarily believe that the vaccine would not help prevent it as well. It is otherwise not that different.
What other therapies are out there that we should be aware of?
So there are a couple antibody therapies that have been developed, which are, as opposed to antibodies from people, these are kind of grown in the lab that can be infused like an IV in a person. And there are some studies showing that these antibodies can maybe dampen the illness a little bit and prevent hospitalization. So in people who have COVID but they haven't gotten super sick yet, they haven't required to go into the hospital, if they have risk factors for that, they may be eligible for getting one of these antibody infusions. It's been very difficult to roll out these antibodies across the country. There's a lot of limitations in who may benefit from them, and it's difficult to administer them, because, of course, these are in people who have COVID infection, and there's infection control worries about spreading the disease in some of these infusion centers. We have been using them here at Geisinger, but it's been slower than we would have liked. Whether or not they'll ultimately prove super useful, I think, remains to be seen. But it is an interesting new avenue of development for therapies. We would hope that further treatments along those lines are going to come out in the future as far as different ways to affect the immune system and improve the outcomes. Other antiviral therapies, things that actually block the virus themselves and inhibit the replication of the virus. We want to try to get away from just intravenous type of medicines and hopefully have things like pills that we can use, you know, at home much more readily and easily. Hopefully, you know, science is going to bring us down that path in this coming year as well. I would just remind everybody that this is also flu season coming up, and it's always a good time to get your flu shot. We can't distinguish flu from COVID necessarily without getting tested, and if you were to be one of those unfortunate ones to actually get both at the same time, it could really be bad. So please, get your flu shot. It will help you. And remember what I said about the masking and the social distancing. Prevention is always the best medicine at the end of the day. And we know that those are the things which help. So stay safe and keep each other safe.
And we appreciate you joining us on the program today, Dr. Stanley Martin. Dr. Martin is Director of Infectious Diseases at Geisinger, and he's been bringing us the latest on the COVID virus and the vaccines and just what's next in this pandemic. Thanks for joining us on the program. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.